Hey, welcome to another episode of Life 2.0. I'm John St. Augustine. Glad to have you with me today. It's a gorgeous day here in the suburbs of Chicago, Illinois. I hope that you are well wherever you're listening. I've been getting a little feedback. Not so much blowback, which is good. Feedback's good. Blowback, nah, not so good, but you got to deal with it. Get some feedback over the last long holiday weekend as we're just coming off Memorial Day. And it seemed to be a time for people to catch up on episodes they haven't caught up on before, the subscribers. And so first of all, thank you for subscribing to the podcast. It was 2 years ago on Memorial Day that I kicked off this iteration of what I do in radio. I've beat it into the ground, but might as well rise it up one more time. Been doing this a very, very long time, 2 decades plus. And so the podcasting thing, I started in 2014, did that for a few years and got out of it and came back into it 2 years ago on Memorial Day. And the first podcast I ever did was with a friend of mine. I played semi-pro football with Greg Daniels. His son, Nicky, was killed in action. And I went to the funeral, had not seen Greg for a very, very long time. And we reconnected under the worst of circumstances, but he's one of the best guys that I know. And we've stayed in touch ever since. And matter of fact, a couple weeks ago, unauthorized entry, but I know the owner, of the On the Rocks Tavern in an undisclosed location outside of Chicago. And Greg and I sat and bent our elbows for a little while and talked about things that were important, like Memorial Day. And I just want, you know, we're on the backside of that, but I need to touch on it. I almost sat and did a whole rant yesterday about Memorial Day. And I realized it's like the Jurassic Park thing. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. I probably could have gone off and, you know, hammered away at stuff. And instead, I just hoisted a few for the men and women that didn't come home. And that's really what Memorial Day is. There's nothing happy about it. Happy belongs in front of birthday, Thanksgiving, Halloween, New Year, Gilmore. The rest of it doesn't fit. And it's really difficult for those of us who are veterans, and especially the Gold Star families, to hear happy Memorial Day, because Memorial Day is about their sons and daughters that didn't come home the way that they left. They came home and are in the ground somewhere. And so I'm not going to stop Memorial Day sales happening and 20% off. And I'm not going to stop that. All I can do is remind people that there is a huge difference between Memorial Day and Veterans Day. So as I mentioned, as a veteran myself, United States Coast Guard, it's nice to be thanked for your service, because there was a time that nobody was thanked for their service, especially after Vietnam. And so that's come out of that quite a bit, and that's a good thing. But we're also asking the general public to take a step further and recognize that there's nothing happy about Memorial Day, number one. And number two, thanking me for my service on Memorial Day is not the day that you do it. You do that on Veterans Day. If you want to do it at all, that's the day to do it. So it's an uphill slog, but I thought it bared mentioning, because I'm taping this introduction with all full disclosure. I'm like an open book over here. This is the day after Memorial Day. But the conversation you're going to hear in just a few minutes with Myrna James Yu, I taped back in early May, I think it was. So it's all about how this stuff gets laid out and structured, and I'll tell you why in just a few minutes. But that's really what I wanted to kind of lead off with here, that there's a lot going on in the world that we can't do a damn thing about, and yet it bothers us to the certain point where we just are constantly in reaction to this stuff. So even in myself, I'm my own case file here. I've decided that, you know, I will just gently remind wherever I possibly can that Memorial Day and Veterans Day are not the same thing. But getting back to what people were listening to over the weekend, I had more comments. It was interesting how these ebbs and flows of what people's listening habits are about, very different from when I was on, quote, regular terrestrial radio, when you turn on the dial on WGN from, 9 to noon, and there I was, always the same spot. Now, podcasting is very, very different. I can tape this, and these shows sit there in perpetuity, and some people are going back. So I have people going back to shows, a year ago, year and a half ago, go, man, that was the best thing I ever heard. I'm like, did I do that show? And two particularly this weekend, for some reason, Jerry Kramer, who played for the Green Bay Packers during the Lombardi years and first two Super Bowls and Hall of Fame guy, great guy, just a longtime stalwart in my life. His, for some reason, once somebody listens to one of those podcasts with Jerry, almost like 19 other people listen. So that was pretty cool. And he had a lot of great things to say. And it actually reminded me that I probably should get him on back again. The last time I talked to him was right before he was going to the Hall of Fame in 2018. And and he had so much to say. But the thing about it with Kramer, it's not about football for me. I mean, it is, but that's all way in the past. It's about who he is and what he's become because of that. And I think that lends itself to the transformational nature of humans. And here's a guy that was, it's like Emerson with a football helmet on. I just get the biggest kick out of him, and pretty amazing guy. And then the other one that was real big was Dr. Jane Goodall. That's from last summer. And Dr. Jane was in Chicago doing a major fundraiser when you can still have a lot of people in one place. And all her works with the chimpanzees and all that. And so somehow, you know, that popped up again. So I get these notices and these algorithms that people are listening to certain things, and it's really fascinating. So just a reminder, A, number one, thanks for subscribing and supporting this work. It's $20 a month, which is the cost of a pizza. So if you find value in this, you know, you can easily become a subscriber. Just go to any of these subscriber-only episodes and click on, and I'll charge you $20 a month off your credit card, no problem. But the thing is, just, again, full disclosure, I don't get that full $20. I get $16 from every one of those that gets punched. $2 goes to podcasting on Podbean, and $2 goes to the billing service. They're making a shitload more money than I am across the board. But again, thanks for subscribing. And number two, there is a ton of stuff there. Christopher Reeve comes to mind. There's all these podcasts that are sitting there. And if you haven't gotten a chance to get to them, then, you know, just know that that's there, and enjoy those. Today is really interesting to me. This is a... I often talk about the ripple effect and the connect the dots and all those kind of things, and you have to pay attention to some of this stuff. And today is no different. And so let's get to it. It'll all explain itself. We'll go up the down staircase in the frickin' outdoor. Absolutely going to make sense out of the senseless. And as I always do, it is because I should get like some really long bumper sticker to say, let's find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. The only reason we're having this conversation is because of Eva Herr. And I was contacted by Eva this past January, to help her with a book that she was working on. And she already had a book out that had done very well, Agape. And it really, it's kind of a combination of her story with some serious downloads from other levels, let's put it that way. And a mutual friend put us together because of the work that I do is helping... kind of like building a house. If you stand too close, sometimes you can't see it. And she was obviously a gifted writer and very gifted visionary person, but sometimes you get too close, you can't do it. So I had gone through her material, and I had made copious notes, and it was very apparent that some of the projects I work on, I get the chance to ghost write and do almost all the work. Other ones a little bit spackling here and there, and some other ones are potholes here and there. But this work was very self-evident to me that because of what she was given to talk about and this story that she had was uniquely her own. There was no way I could ever sit and duplicate that. So that's where we had started. We agreed that my job would be more of a coach for her, to get her on a timeline, to get her on some you know, structure so she could pull these things together. And we were to start that March 1st, 2020. And it wasn't too many days before that I was on Facebook. I had not heard from her. I knew that she had some health challenges. She said she'd get back to me. That was the reason she set the March 1st start date for the project. She had some things going on, and she was down in Atlanta, and she'd get back to me. I said, great. And I went on Facebook, and I found out that Eva had passed away. And I, even though we only had maybe three or four conversations, half a dozen emails back and forth, it's one of those kind of gut punches. You go, well, okay. And after that subsided for a day or two, my first question in my mind was, what do I do with this manuscript that's sitting on my desktop that I spent 6-8 hours looking at? I don't own this, and she does, and now what? So I let that sit for a few days, and something nudged me. I live my life a lot of times on the nudge, and the nudge was go back and look at her page to see if there's any updates or whatever. And she'd already, this has got to be after her funeral, probably a week after her funeral. And there, behold, was a posting from Myrna James Yu, who said she's a friend of Eva's, and she had known about a manuscript, and if anybody had information about it, to get in touch with her. And I thought, are you kidding me? So I reached out to Myrna through Facebook and kind of said, this is what went down, and we had a phone conversation, and that was the end of that. It was very evident to me that part of the reason that Eva and I had any conversation at all was for Myrna and I to meet. She joins me from Denver, Colorado, one of my favorite places on the planet. Myrna, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much, John. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
It kind of got me the heebie-jeebies in a good way a little bit recounting that, because it wasn't that long ago, and here we are talking about this. And you had met Eva when you took her to Aspen and back. What was the deal there?
Yeah, I met her last summer, July of 2019, in Aspen, and she had actually taken a super shuttle all the way from DIA to Aspen. So she arrived during this welcome dinner at a conference called Earth's Call, really about, you know, the environment work and saving the planet and all of this. And she sat next to me at the dinner and was so miserable. And I just, within 5 minutes, offered to take her to the airport when the conference was over. So I had the luxury of spending about 4 hours in the car with her, captive audience, right? Mm-hmm. As we drove to DIA a few days later. And of course, we just, in that drive, I felt so close to her. And she followed up by sending me her book, her first book, Agape, The Intent of the Soul is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And I was planning to go visit her in Atlanta and go to her little cabin in the mountains with her. And I really felt the same gut punch. That's a really good way to put that. And I also saw on Facebook that she had passed away. She was posting constantly about really deep wisdom around health. And I was tracking her very closely. And so I was really, really, even though I just met her last summer, I was really devastated that she had passed away.
There are some people, the concept of the ripple effect, a show I did a couple of weeks ago with a guy named Tom Rutledge, I asked him at the end of the conversation, you know, what's the big aha for you? He's a psychotherapist for 40 years. He's been sober for 30 years. You know, just has gone through the ringer 9 times out of 10 and comes out the other side. And, you know, I want to know from people like that. It's like Jim Carrey said, I don't like to have conversations with people who just live at the surface. If you haven't had your ass kicked 4 or 5 times, what's the point of being here? And Tom Rutledge.
I completely agree. Right.
Tom Rutledge is one of those guys. And I said, what's the big aha? And he says, well, it's the ripple effect. He says, you know, a lot of times we do things and we're doing it for us, but not realizing it's rippling out. And for some people, depending on who you are, to a greater or lesser degree, that ripple carries on after you're gone. And getting ready to talk with you today about all the things we're going to discuss, which I'm very excited about. You know, once again, here's Eva, who I never met in person, on the phone 4, 5, 6 times and emails, and something went into the pond, a ripple went out, a concentric ring hit you, it hit me. And here we are talking about these important issues because of her. So I have to kind of give credit where credit is due. And wherever she's listening from, I hope we do a good job.
Yeah. Thank you, Eva. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But so that leads to the next piece of the little puzzle. And Bill Curtis and I have known each other 30 years. And we're having a conversation, you and I. And next thing you know, we're getting onto the, wait a minute, aren't you the Earth Matters guy? And how does this happen? And next thing you know, tell people listening how you know Bill.
I can't believe this part of this story. I really can't believe it.
Yeah.
My mother wrote a nonfiction book that we published in 2015. My publishing company, Blue Line Publishing, published it in 2015. And it was a, oh my gosh, she worked on this for 6 years full time. It was about Operation Baby Lift at the end of the Vietnam War in 1975. They flew out. Really, it was our Air Force and our whole military had ultimately committed to doing this. They flew out over 3,000 orphans, infants and children, who would have perished, and many did, of course. They weren't able to get them all out at the end of the Vietnam War, right? Saigon is falling and on fire, and they are flying plane load after plane load of babies out of Vietnam. The book is called Angels Flying Out of Hell. And in mom's research, she found out that Bill Curtis had photos. He was actually there in Vietnam covering that for CBS News at the time. And it turns out he had lots of personal photos and was very passionate about the story as well. So he ended up endorsing our book and was hosted a book launch party in Chicago. And he was speaking at the book launch party, of course. And we published some of his personal photos. Really, the best photos in the book are these incense lined up in rows and rows of cardboard boxes. You know, some of them crying, some of them, you know, grabbing hands with the one next to them. They're just really powerful photos. So Bill was a huge advocate of our project, and we're really, really, it was thrilling to meet him. And then I stumbled across Earth Matters on Facebook from him, and really was, I didn't realize he was doing all the environmental work as well.
Yeah.
I knew he had tall grass beef and that that was an environmental, you know, that that was actually done very consciously. But I didn't realize that he was doing Earth Matters. And so I saw your name. And this was, I don't know, a couple years ago. And just kind of thought, well, that's interesting. And, you know, and so now to have that connection in addition to Eva, to me, is really, really exciting.
Well, I got to tell you, I don't know that I tell people this all the time or I share this, but the way Earth Matters started, I was at Oprah Radio for 4 years and I was one of the original architects of what eventually become Oprah and Friends Radio and all that stuff. And we had a big lineup of big name people. And at one point, I'm pretty adept over time creating short form programming because people's attention span is probably eroded to nothing. So a minute seems like a long time, but it's definitely an effective space to communicate. And so I had done thousands of my own 1 minute vignettes called Power Thoughts over the years, well over 6,000 of them. I don't know where this comes from. I write them, we produce them, and they work. And so we were setting up short form stuff at Harpo, and I had created Money Matters for Gene Chatsky and Health Matters for Dr. Oz. And I wanted to do an Earth Matters thing, but we didn't have anybody really on staff in that direction. And I was doing a weekly show, and I didn't think it was my place to voice it. And I had Bill coming over to talk to Oz about, at the time, his tall grass beef and all that went into that you mentioned. And by the time he hung up the phone at Curtis Productions and was on his way over to Harpo, I had written 4 or 5 scripts. And
That's great.
Yeah, they're just 164 words. You know, it's just nothing to them. And I grabbed him when he came in. I said, when you're done with Oz, let's do this. So I put him in a studio. He read them. And I put him in my computer in the what was Dalet, which is the editing software, and I forgot about him for 4 years. honest to God. And I left Harpo. I was out of there in late 2009, early 2010. And in 2013, so roughly 3.5, 4 years later, I get an email from a friend of mine, John Keith, who was the production guy that did all our radio production. And he says, hey, bro. He says, what do you want me to do with these Earth Minutes? And I said, what are you talking about, Earth Minutes? Yeah, he goes, Bill Curtis, you ever heard these? I'm like, I don't even remember doing this. There was so much, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
And he says, well, listen, I put production around them, and they're brilliant, you know, because he's a brilliant producing guy. And he sent them to me, and I thought, he is right. I vaguely remember writing them, barely remember Bill doing them. That was the end of it. When I listened to these 3 or 4 minute audio pieces, I thought, what is this? So by then, Bill had already come back to CBS. He and Walter Jacobson here in Chicago are a big name for many years.
Yep.
Retired
from
that.
Yep, I remember. Yep. I lived there through the 90s. Yep.
Yeah, they were the dynamic duo of news. I mean, just call it what it is. And right around 2011, 12, CBS said, let's bring them back. So they brought them back for a year or whatever it was, and they did okay, but they weren't going to continue for 5 years. And I had to wait until he was finished with that CBS contract. I had sent him these. He said, when did we do these? I'm like, I don't remember either. So so we went in one day, had a nice meeting at Curtis, and they have the state-of-the-art facilities, and I wrote 5 more. And I said, let me just see what these sound like before we start getting ahead of ourselves. And I did these 5 more, sent it to my buddy John. He did some more production on them. I thought, we got something here. So 300 episodes later, Earth Matters became a thing, and it was, you know, it did well in syndication, all that kind of stuff. And it was really our attempt to create something from nothing that allowed people to be informed, maybe a little bit entertained, certainly inspired, to things they don't hear about in the headlines, and then kind of create lifelines from those. And Bill and I did a, you know, an event every year called Earth Matters in person. So, you know, it was a public event, and we had done one in 2019. It was great. And it was just, it's like this, it's a tag team effort. You know, he and I are, we have similar concerns, but different approaches. Let's put it that way. And I am far more pounding the podium, Teddy Roosevelt, we need to get our, you know, shit together thing. And he comes from this journalistic, scientific background. He's more like Walter Cronkite, you know? So it's very effective. And we get a kick out of watching each other. So last year, we did a 90-minute event. I did the first 45 minutes, and I had created those videos that you have seen on Facebook on the Earth Matters page out of the audio that we did over the years. And to see those, to see those on a giant screen and the audience reaction, immediate, not like on the radio and there are cars somewhere, to see the audience reaction when I talk about, you know, the sharks, and I wrote this script and Bill does it, and it's, you know, the 100 million sharks are taken out of the water every year so people can have soup. And you can hear the audible gasps.
They are among the oldest animals on Earth and have the reputation for being one of the deadliest. But when it comes to sharks, man is the predator. Recently, a 1,323-pound Mako shark was caught off the coast of California, the largest shark to be caught on a rod and reel. Each year, approximately 100 million sharks are taken from the sea, mostly for their fins. The act of finning is a brutal practice that uses only the fins, cut off while the shark is alive, and then the fish is dumped overboard, where it slowly sinks and suffocates. Removing that many sharks from the food chain can have dire consequences in the long term. These magnificent creatures have been on Earth for over 300 million years, but now their fate is uncertain. I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
And I love the bee one.
There are at least 20,000 known species of bees in the world. But it's what we don't know about this amazing insect that might be one of the biggest challenges we face with regard to the environment in the next 20 years. A Cornell University study estimates that honeybees annually pollinate $14 billion worth of seeds and crops in the United States. Essentially, if honeybees disappear, they could take most of our insect-pollinated plants with them. The past 6 years have brought about a condition called CCD, or colony collapse disorder, an acceleration in the annual die-off of bees that some experts believe has to do with sprayed-on pesticides. While there are big problems when it comes to long-term sustainability, it might just turn out that the bee contains our greatest chance for survival. I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
So all of these were this was a great setup because I kind of hit him between the eyes, and then Bill came in and said, and here's what we can do about it. And he's all about the prairie and the grass and those type of things and what you can do in your yard. It was very, very effective. So this year, without having that availability, he was the first Earth Matters kind of episode. We touched on that, the concept that we often have to look outside in instead of inside out. And I know a lot of the work that you do has to do with space and NASA. So in a capsule, no pun intended, how did you start the work you do with the magazine, and especially with NASA, this connection with space?
Yeah, thank you for asking. 17 years ago, my company acquired a magazine called Imaging Notes from then Space Imaging, which was one of the first companies to do commercial satellite imagery, to be able to take photos from satellites of the Earth and sell them commercially. There were only two companies doing that in the U.S. at the time, Digital Globe and Space Imaging. And so I bought the magazine from Space Imaging and published it as Space Imaging for many years. And it's really about how organizations are using data from space to study the Earth. And so over the years, I've really had the privilege of watching and reporting on companies merging, products launching, new tech coming out. You know, it's really been fascinating. I'm certainly not an expert, but I have a very broad view of the industry. For example, in 2005, I will never forget when Google Earth was launched, and then right after that, Hurricane Katrina occurred. And I was at a conference, probably in New Orleans, one of the GeoInt conferences, I think, and talking to Michael Jones, who was one of the founders of Google Earth. He was with Keyhole, and Google bought Keyhole to create Google Earth in 2005. And he and I were just talking about the power of this data and how important it is, because people were using it to rescue people off of rooftops in Katrina, and the data wasn't immediate, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't current data, of course, so you couldn't see the water and everything. But then over time, these products, Google Earth and others, became so powerful and so important, and now the data is updated so frequently. It's really incredible. So I've also watched, you know, companies like SpaceX come in. You know, these companies are called, there's a term for it, it's new space companies, as opposed to the old aerospace companies, the old guard. And SpaceX, honestly, is really making space sexy again. It really is. And it's not Elon per se. But to me, intelligence is really sexy. So there you have it, right?
Right, right.
So what's so exciting about SpaceX right this minute is on May 27th, they are launching for the first time in their Crew Dragon. They're going to the space station with people in it, to the space station for the first time from U.S. soil since 2011. Since that time, when the space shuttle retired, we have had to launch astronauts into space from Russia, relying on the Soyuz rocket and taking off from Kazakhstan. So this is a very, very big deal, and it's in a way, it's not prestige, it's pride, right? It's restoring the American pride that we can do this ourselves. We can get humans to the space station without relying on Russia. That's a very big deal. So that's another thing that's happening. And then just to finish up about the magazine, in 2013, I relaunched it as Apogee Spatial. I wanted to update the name, you know, do something intriguing. Apogeo is a play on apogee, of course. It's also a play on the word geospatial, which is what it really, the name of our industry. And so I have really put the stake firmly in the ground now that the publication is not just about how data is used for all these projects and all these use cases. It's very much about how the data is used for the benefit of the Earth and humanity. Because if you think about it, we all need a place to live, right?
Taking care of the earth
is so incredibly important for that reason.
One of the, if not the running theme through every show I've done that is around Earth Week, Earth Day, Earth Awareness, is that concept that my end of it is that humans have this deep vein of denial. Not all of them, but just enough to screw things up. And that somehow we are above the laws of nature, above the laws of that govern, really, this little blue ball that hangs in space that is just the most incredible thing. Tom Skilling, one of the other podcasts, was saying what his observation, the best way to put it, is that the protective layer of the ozone that allows life to stay here on the planet, if you took a peach, is the same as the skin of a peach. It's that fragile and that thin. And so we're inside the peach, and that little skin on the outside is what holds everything together. When you start messing around and doing things that you don't know what kind of response you're going to get or reaction you're going to get from putting all this carbon in the air, we're literally cutting our own throats at a very slow rate without even realizing it. And it's not until we have some sort of calamity or you know, chaos that people at least wake up a little bit. Unfortunately, like everybody else, we hit the snooze alarm and go back to sleep, and then this starts all over again. But what you're doing to me is a little bit different, meaning that you're changing our perspective. When I go to the magazine and I look at all the different articles and issues and things that you present there, a lot of what we do at Earth Matters is focused, as I said, kind of more from terra firma up. You're looking from the outside in or from the upside down, which is really...
upside down, I love it.
Well, it's true. And I think most people don't get that view. And when you spend time watching videos or interviews of the astronauts, to a person, to a man and to a woman, they go, that perspective of looking from the inside, you know, from the outside in, even with all their training, is the one thing that has been most profound for them.
Yeah, that's right. I love that. It's It's the overdue effect. That's the term that was, I believe, coined by Frank White, who's at Harvard and has written the most about it. There's also an Overview Institute, just incidentally. Yeah, I'd love to mention Nick Hague. He is an astronaut who was on the space station last year for 6 months. Mm-hmm. He, in fact, is from my hometown, which is Hoxie, Kansas. And so my mother was his high school English teacher. And one of the things that the astronauts are really told to do, I believe, is to take pictures of the people who literally helped them get there to the space station, right? Mm-hmm. Who are their mentors or their advisors? And he took a photo of my mother and honored her from the space station by putting her photo in the cupola and posting about that. And it was really amazing. I interviewed him for a podcast in the magazine, an article, and he told me that story at the very beginning. So at the beginning of our interview, I'm crying, right? I didn't know that was happening, but it was so sweet. But here's the thing: they've just posted on Facebook about on the space station page is an interview with him. It's about 4 minutes, and he talks about feeling so connected to each other and to the Earth. And he said, he realized he has a large part. He can have a large impact, but still be something very small. And what he's really talking about is the death of our ego, right? The moment when we realize that we are not, as individuals, ourselves, that important. Or rather, you know, we have to listen to the part of ourselves that is wiser, our higher self, rather than our ego. And we have to approach these things in a different way. And that's what is really, that's raising our consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. And it's so important. I mean, that's your work. That's what your work is all about. Since it seems to me, of what little I know of you, John, now that I'm halfway through your autobiography, your near-death experiences,
yeah, it is.
Which one of, you know, it's about that. And I think that when people have huge transformational experiences like that, as you did, as Eva did, as Nick did when he went to the space station, and almost every astronaut has that experience. For me, it was a totally different experience, but it was a similar thing that happened, which was traveling around the world for a year and a half solo with a backpack. That experience raised my consciousness in a way that I was forever changed. I mean, it's hard to express it when you get back. And I think what it is, if you drill down, it's about broadening perspective. What we need to do is broaden our perspective. And the more people that experience that in whatever way it is for them, mine certainly isn't from going to space, you know. But however people can achieve that, it is just so important, to just broaden our perspective and then get...
Without question,
dampen our ego.
Absolutely, it is a pivot point for humanity. And whether anybody else wakes up or not, we have no control over that. My job has always been to deliver the mail, whether anybody reads or not is out of my. But my salvation comes from delivering the mail. It's why I do this. It's what keeps me awake and alive, and it keeps me not just being taking up space and complaining and being a clot of ailments all the time. So
yeah, that's really lovely.
Well, I appreciate that, but it's like this constant work. And so when I looked at all that you got your fingers in with the publishing and the magazine and all the rest of it, I would think that this keeps you awake as well, wouldn't it?
Oh gosh, you know what? It's the most important thing in my life. I'm grateful that I have this viewpoint, not having gone through a near-death experience, right? Or something more intense. I mean, I kind of came to it fortunately from a incredibly positive experience.
I was going to say real quick, you don't want to go through those. You know what I mean?
I know.
I think that the people that are the hard-headedest and most stubborn, we're the ones that have to go through that stuff. So good for you.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, Eva's was she calls it her dark night of the soul, which I've certainly had mine as well. But she really went through an extremely difficult personal experience and then literally was transformed overnight almost into someone who was so intuitive. And she became sort of a medical intuitive. after that. She just knew things. And I think it's just amazing. It's fascinating.
You know, we're not here, in my opinion, observation, and experience, to suffer while we're doing the work. I mean, this jacks me up. This feeds me. I breathe through this stuff, much like I'm sure what you do. And everybody that I have on this show, in some way, shape, or form, this is what gets them up early and keeps them up late and keeps them going where they're going. And all those pieces, those puzzle pieces, they connect and they make a pretty interesting picture and mosaic at times. So I get what you're saying, but I want to make the announcement that I've really been aching to make about Earth Matters.
Great.
Because this is just a whole nother piece of the puzzle. And so you mentioned earlier about, hearing the Earth Matters a couple years ago and then making the connection or seeing it on Facebook and whatever. And like many things, everything runs its course, you know. And we did 300 episodes. They were on radio syndication around the country and online. It was great. A lot of great feedback. And I started creating the videos, and those were great and all that kind of stuff. And it's interesting to me the response people have when you combine the audio with the images. You know, I'm a radio guy from way back. I think, you know, there's a part of your brain that has to work a little bit when we're doing this show, and you have to wonder what this looks like or what are they talking about. And it's got to work a little bit. I'm all for that. I loved all the old Jack Benny shows and the stuff from the 40s and the 50s because you had to work a little bit, right? But there is a lot of power in imagery, and so combining the audio that we created for radio with the images that you've seen on Facebook, and anybody listening can see at the Earth Matters page where the videos are at, there's something there. And when the radio run ended, 36 months, 300 episodes, constantly in rotation, it was difficult on one hand to let that go. It had run its course, as all things do, and I packed them all away in the virtual vault of Earth Matters, and it's on my desktop and a couple other places and all safe and secure, and I would roll them out.
And when was that? When did it run?
We ran from 14 to 17. 2014, 2015, 2016, finished somewhere about 3.5 years, somewhere in there. And they were staggered. And then they went into a couple places online that were airing them, and sure, no problem. And out they went for another year. And then I just parked them on Facebook, and I thought, we'll just leave it at that. So Bill and I went back and forth on the many uses. And as I mentioned earlier, we did public events, and we'd use them there, and very effective and great. And when you and I were in conversation, I don't know where the spark was again, but I started to think about the application of these. I believe that was your idea. And if I had a little drum roll, which we're so excited that we're going to be able to somehow integrate the Earth Matters concept and branding with the Apogeo Spatial platform. So yay.
Yay. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. I'm really thrilled and flattered and humbled that Earth Matters is partnering with Apogeo Spatial. It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait to start posting these videos on our website and, of course, all across social media, and also give you a presence in the magazine in print, right? Mm-hmm. And you know what? It didn't even occur to me until now is that you will now have access to, for future production, should you pick that back up, of all this satellite imagery that I have access to.
Wow, very cool. Well, it might be time, you know, the I sent you some of the images that we use, the billboards for Earth Matters, and they were very simple stuff. So, you know, it might be time to take that up to another level. We'll have to discuss that before we do the whole launch thing. But we're thrilled. I talked with Bill the other day, and of course, you and I have exchanged emails, and he remembered your mom and the whole book thing. It was just, once again, he was just like, well, that's how it works, you know, when you're doing the right thing. And he does the whole Bill Curtis stuff. So, you know, and he went through this whole deal. And I remember once we were at lunch. I love telling this story. We were at lunch at, you may even know where this is, the Green Door. Right on. So it's walking distance to Curtis, and we often go there for lunch, and it's been a while. But one of the times we were there, we were going through all this, and I said, yeah, you got more lives than a cat. I said, you start out, you know, doing the whole CBS thing, and then you go to New York, and then you come back to Chicago. Then you basically retire, and you're going to do some documentary films. And he did The New Explorers, and somebody at A&E picks up on it. Next thing you know, you got this whole other career as not just a documentarian, but now you're like Mr. A&E, Cold Case Files, American Justice, American Greed. Then he's making commercials with Floyd Mayweather for AT&T. And, you know, then he goes into the Anchorman movies, and it just goes on and on. It just goes on and on.
And then I listen to him to this day. I listen to him every weekend on NPR. Wait, Don't Tell Me.
7 million people listen to Wait, Don't Tell Me. on NPR. And
yep.
And I said, what's the deal with all this, BK? Come on, spill your guts. He says, well drawn, here's how it is. He says, and we're sitting at this little table at Green Door, and he still had the makeup on. At that time, they were shooting at Curtis downstairs at one of the production companies. So he had the makeup on still, and he had a little thing around his neck where they put the makeup on. And we walked over to lunch this way. And he takes a knife, and he pushes the knife right to the edge of the table. He says, this is how life is. And he pushes the knife right. He goes, you push things right to the edge, that's where it's get really interesting. I'm like, that's it? He said, yep, that's it. He figures his whole career has been just pushing things right to the edge to see if they're going to fall over or stay up and see what happens. And he said, they all don't work, obviously. It doesn't all turn out. He goes, oh, you only in the world only sees the ones that work, right? I mean, we've had, all of us, failures behind the scenes that never took place. But he said, I read somewhere that Sylvester Stallone, he called him Sly. I don't know if he knows him in person. He goes, I read somewhere right. that Sly Stallone said that 96% of the time I fail, but that 4%, damn, it was worth it. And he said, that's kind of how it runs. So here we are, 11 years from when I first sat in my office at Harpo and wrote four little scripts. And now look where we're at now for Earth Matters. So thank you.
Yeah. You're so welcome. Yeah. It's really going to be a privilege. And you know, the thing is, it's a perfect fit with where Apogee Spatial is now and where we're going, because we really are broadening our audience to not just, you know, image analysts and DOD people who are using imagery and oil and gas companies. And, you know, I mean, we're really broadening our audience to a more, you know, really to citizens, to people, to activists. It's a space enthusiasts and environmental activists and people like that. So it's a perfect fit with where we're going mm-hmm. as well. And to help us make the point that you made earlier as well, which is, we have to start respecting nature. We have to start working with nature and aligning with what the natural systems are in the world, because we're in big trouble here. Mm-hmm. And this is the only way that that's going to change. As well as not to even mention the mental health benefits of being in nature. You know, that's sort of historically how I think of nature, but I'm working with a group in Panama right now called GeoVersity. Mm-hmm. It's a nature preserve, and they have, we're creating a school of biocultural leadership right now, which is it's really the umbrella organization for all these trainings that they've done for almost 20 years. What we can learn from nature, literally. Mm. And they're partnering with the Biomimicry Institute, and starting businesses based on what we learn from mimicking nature, right?
Wow.
It's just incredible work. And they are really, you know, they're the ones who are teaching me, frankly,
yeah.
how important it is to be aligned with nature and not just to enjoy it for mental health benefits, right? Mm-hmm. Getting out, get out in nature. And it really does help. It's important. But there's so much more to it, right?
Yeah.
And so I can also continue to convey those messages in the magazine. We did do a feature about them in our last issue because they have sophisticated maps of their nature preserve, and they can even quantify the amount of carbon sequestration going on based on the age of each tree that exists there. They plant huge numbers of trees. They've got areas that they're reforesting. 15 years ago, you would never have known that this whole area, which is near Junglewood Falls, was barren, and now mm-hmm. it's just full of lush trees next to the river. Mm. It's really important, and I'm really excited about your content, our future content, and all the things that we can do together, you know, as we partner.
Absolutely. And before I get to the last big question, anything that we didn't cover you need to take care of before I cut you loose?
Well, you know, this might be what you're going to bring up as well, but we're living in such strange times right now, you know, with the coronavirus going around and everything how that's impacting so many people around the world. And I think that we need to remind ourselves that it's an opportunity to connect with our loved ones. right? We're at home with our loved ones and just to not take things for granted. But more importantly, or rather, I don't know if it's more important, but it's creating a space for this silent opening that we need, that you and I both believe in very much, which is it's a time to meditate and contemplate and be quiet so that we can allow the space for the messages from the divine, right? Mm-hmm. They don't come in unless we have space and time and silence, whether it's meditation or prayer or however we think of that and however people do it. There's many ways to do that, to create that space. But I think that that's also now is an opportunity to really do that at a whole new level. So I'm looking at, you know, the positive side of this time when we're home for, you know, unexpectedly.
What I wanted to ask, I ask almost every show because I think that when you take a look at, you do this in your magazine, obviously, you're looking at a much broader picture. And I think, you know, very few of us will ever get the chance to obviously see Earth from above, from the view that the astronauts have taken and that you display so beautifully in Apogeo Spatial. It's really like going in, when I go to the website, it's like artwork. I'm like, wow, look, that's just astonishing. And it's just obviously a replication in a way that we can at least appreciate to some degree the value of perspective. So when you look back on, you know, 17 years ago, buying the magazine, that was one thing, and then it's become this thing, and then all the other work that you do, and then you roll all the rest of the stuff we've talked about in here and where you're headed with it. What's the big aha for you? What's the takeaway when you stand back from your own path and have a perspective on looking at it almost as a spectator, not always as a participant? What's the big aha for you after this time?
John, I appreciate that question. It is that I am on the right path. I am on the right path for my life. And I think it's a luxury. I feel very blessed because I did follow the breadcrumbs, so to speak, right? The little clues. And it wasn't always perfect, certainly. And there's been years where I'm hanging by a thread with this magazine, right? I've published 70 issues, more than 70 issues now. Mm. But I didn't know how that trip around the world 20 years ago, which was so profound at the time, I didn't know how it was going to tie into my work, right? And it has. It does. And I wouldn't be publishing the magazine in the way that I am, focused on the things that I'm focusing on, if it weren't for that trip around the world, right? I had my overview effect experience by broadening my perspective. And I really, to this day, can't believe it's somehow incorporated into my work, because that's what I always wanted, you know? And it took time, of course, it took years, and all kinds of false paths and, you know, failures, or, you know, false starts, I should say.
Sure.
But here we are, and I'm really, really so sure that this is where we're meant to be, you know?
So amazing to me. I started writing those, you know, a long time ago with Bill, and while I did all the research, of course, on the scripts and wrote all those scripts that are the basis for Earth Matters, all the audio that you hear was edited and compiled by Katie Gibson, who actually I hired at Harpo back in, never mind what year it was. It was quite a while ago, and Katie was on my production team for the Dr. Oz Show, Gene Chatsky, Bob Green, and a few other assorted projects we had going. And so even after I had left Harpo, Katie continued with great success and really incredible work to create the audio that you hear to put all the Earth Matters together. And we had a good run with those. In the media, there's no assurances that you can get anything done. And that was always, you know, a special shout out to my friend Matt Sparky Cummings, who was the GM at the radio station. Those played out in Chicago and in other syndicated markets. The Earth Matters, and he believed in the project. That's what you need. You need somebody who's going to believe in it and get behind it and give you the space to do it. Everything on radio is paid for by commercials. And so in order to give up even a minute of airtime, you have to have all your puzzle pieces in the box, as it were, and make those things work as best you can. So that's how it all rolled out on regular traditional radio. And then, as you heard, I did these videos, and then Bill and I have done these public events. And here comes Myrna James, you. And here now they're going to be on Apogeo Spatial, on the magazine, and on the website, and I'm just thrilled for that. And again, this is something that's always been very, very important to me since I was a kid. You know, I first read about Teddy Roosevelt in a little series of books called Childcraft, and it was just a very short volume. It's called Great Men and Famous Deeds. And there was a story in there about young T.R. Growing up in New York as a sickly little kid, and he'd go down to the harbor and visit and see what was going on down there, just 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. And someone had caught a harbor seal. I'll never forget this story. Someone caught a harbor seal, and they hauled it up on the dock, and it sat there. And he was fascinated by this harbor seal. And it really kicked off his curiosity for the natural world, to see this beast from under the water, you know, that was now up on land, and he could kind of check it out and measured it. And he did all kind of things around that. And when the seal got too decomposed to do anything else with it, the harbor master gave the skull of that seal to TR, little Teedy, they called him back in the day. And that was the biggest thing that could ever happen. It just put every other domino in motion, in my opinion, that would allow Theodore Roosevelt, our 26th president, to become the most environmentally conscious president we've ever had, and probably ever will have. It was the first specimen in what he called the Theodore Roosevelt Natural History Museum, which still exists now, but it started in his bedroom in New York, and he had a bunch of drawers full of all kind of feathers and things, but that skull was a prominent piece of what he did. And so when I think of Earth Matters, and I think of the influence that Theodore Roosevelt's environmental stance, listen, the guy didn't get everything right, you know, that'd be ridiculous to think that, but more often than not, the things that he talked about and the things that he got behind and the things that he put his back into and his mouth to, he's a great orator with a really high-pitched voice. It doesn't fit the man, but whatever, resonate with me. And they've always resonated with me. And that is to do something that's bigger than yourself. Because I've seen it over and over again. Look, my best grades in school were lunch and gym. You know, I mean, I did okay, but for the most part, my A's, they came in lunch gym. And if I can find something bigger than myself, a calling larger than myself to put myself into, somehow I've gotten moved along with that. And I grow through that. I've grown through this thing. And so back in the day, you know, just I wouldn't want to sit for hours on end. Remember with an Encyclopedia Britannica or the World Book at a table and do research? But when it's something you have a passion for, it's not research anymore. It's not even work, it's effort. And there's purpose to it. So the Earth Matters minutes that I've created, all those 300 of them, came as a direct result of finding something bigger than myself. And it leads you to the next thing, and to the next thing. And I think it reveals talents and abilities you may not even know you have because they're dormant until this thing comes along. So Myrna James Yu has put her heart and soul into something, Apogeo Spatial, that is bigger than she is. It's literally the frickin' universe. And so we're so thrilled, Bill Curtis and I, to partner with Apogeo Spatial. And you'll be able to see the Earth Matters video on their website. And, you know, so it gets me in the production mode again a little bit. I only got about 248 more videos to make. But I find it fascinating because here we are, you know, all this has ever been built on is that if one person sees that video or hears Bill's voice or the script that I wrote or gets a bit of information they didn't have before and they do something with it they normally wouldn't do, then it's worth the effort. The great changes in the world, in my observation, opinion, and experience, are not going to come from governments or some mandate. That's our, you know, screw that. It comes from the people. It's the popular will of the people to do things. And one person makes a huge difference in the world, for better or for worse. A Jane Goodall, a Jerry Kramer, a Myrna James Yu. You know, these are people that are stepping up and up above themselves and putting themselves into things to wake the rest of us up. So with that, let me leave you with this from TR. Here is your country. Cherish these natural wonders. Cherish the natural resources. Cherish the history and romance as a sacred heritage for your children and your children's children. Do not let selfish men or greedy interest skin your country of its beauty, its riches, or its romance. Until next time, safe travels. Thanks for listening. Adios. Thank you.
touch on the mountaintops, sail o'er the canyons, and up to the stars, and reach for the heavens, and hope for the future, and all that we can be, not just what we are.